East Lynne by Mrs. Henry Wood. Adapted for radio in southern parts by Michael Bacon. With Rosemary Leach as Mrs. Henry Wood, Moya Leslie as the Lady Isabel, David Collins as Mr. Carlyle, Anthony Edridge as Francis Levison, Maxine Audley as Miss Cornelia, and Julie Barry as Barbara Hare. Mr. Carlyle has found happiness at last in his marriage with Barbara Hare, but fate has decreed that Lady Isabel, now unrecognizably disfigured and disguised, must suffer the sweet agony of returning to East Lynne as governess to her own children. East Lynne, Part 6. An MP for West Lynne.
As this is not a history of the British Constitution, it is not necessary to relate how or why West Lynne fell into hot water with the House of Commons. The House threatened to disenfranchise it. The threat was not carried out, but one of its members was unseated with ignominy and sent to the right about. He retired, and a writ was issued for an election. The consideration now was who should be the next candidate.
Barbara, what did you say to living in London for a few months out of the 12?
London? I'm very happy where I am. Why should you ask me that? You are not going to live in London.
Well, I'm not so sure of that. I think I am, for a portion of the year. I've had an offer made me this afternoon, Barbara.
What are you talking about? What sort of offer?
Should you want to see MP attached to my name? West Lynne wants me to become its member.
But how? Who has asked you?
Your father, the Justice, among others, and Justice Herbert and Sir John de Bede. They said there wasn't a man in the county as suitable as I.
Oh, Archibald, how glad I am! Oh, I knew you were appreciated, and you will be appreciated more and more. This is right. It was not well for you to remain for life, a private individual, a country lawyer.
I'm perfectly contented with my lot, Barbara. I'm too busy to be otherwise.
I know that were you toiling daily for the bread you eat, you would be contented, feeling that you were fulfilling your appointed duty. But, Archibald, could you not still be a busy man at West Lynne, although you should become its representative?
If I could not, I would not accept the honour, Barbara. For some few months of the year, I must of necessity be in town, but Dill's an efficient substitute. And I can run down for a week or so between times. Part of Saturday, Sunday, and part of Monday I can always pass here if I please. Of course, these changes have their drawbacks as well as their advantages.
But what would be the drawbacks?
Well, in the first place, I suppose you could not always be with me.
Oh, Archibald!
If I do become their member, I must go up to town as soon as elected. And I don't think it would do for my little wife to be quitting her home to travel about just now.
And you must remain in London to the end of the session while I'm here, separated. Oh, Archibald, I could not live without you.
Well, then what is to be done? Must I decline it?
Decline it? Of course not. We're looking on the dark side of things. I can accompany you very well for a month, perhaps two.
Well, you think so?
Oh, I'm sure so. You would rather have me with you, would you not?
What do you think, my darling?
Forgive me.
What is it, Madame Veen?
Would you be so good as to come and look at William?
Certainly.
What for?
He looks so very ill. I do not like his looks. I feel he is worse than we have imagined.
Where is he?
In the great parlour, sir.
We go at once.
What is he doing on the floor? He should not lie on the floor, Madame Veen. He is down there at twilight, and I cannot get him up again. I tried to persuade him to the sofa, but it is of no use.
The floor will not hurt him.
Who is that? Papa?
Don't you feel well, William?
Oh, yes. I'm very well. So I'm tired.
Why do you lie down here?
I like lying here. Papa, that pretty white rabbit of mine is dead.
I suppose you tell me all about it, William.
I don't know much about it myself yet. Blair told Lucy when she was out just now. I did not go. I was tired. He said...
What has tired you?
Oh, nothing. I'm always tired.
Do you tell Mr. Wainwright that you're tired?
No. Why should I tell him? I wish you would not order me to take that nasty cod liver oil.
But it's to make you strong, my boy.
It makes me sick. I'm always sick after it, Papa. Madame Veen says that I ought to have cream. That would be much nicer.
Cream?
Well, I have known cream to do a great deal of good in a case such as Veen's.
All right. It can be tried.
Pray give your orders, Madame Veen, for anything you think may be beneficial to him. You have had more experience with children than I.
What does Wainwright say, Barbara?
I'm not always here to see him when he comes. Oh. Madame Veen does, I believe.
Help me have tea. I want some bread and jam.
Patience is good for little girls, Miss Lucy. Would you like some bread and jam, my boy?
I can't eat jam. I'm only thirsty.
Could I have a word with you, Madame Veen?
Oh, of course. Do you think he looks very ill?
I think he looks ill, yes. What does Mr. Wainwright say?
Well, he says nothing to me. I have not inquired his true opinion. Until tonight, it did not occur to me that there was danger.
Does he look so much worse tonight?
Well, latterly, he has looked just like this every evening. It was a remark of the Maid Hannah's that aroused my alarm. She thinks he is on the road to death. Oh, what can we do to save him?
I shall call in further advice for him, Madame Veen. Oh, who on earth can be calling at this hour? Perhaps you'd better return to the parlour, Madame Veen.
But you must eat something.
I know what I could eat, Mama. If you would let me have it.
What could you eat?
Some cheese.
Cheese? Cheese with tea?
For the last week or two, he has fancied strange things. Effects of a diseased appetite, but if I allow them to be brought in, he barely tastes them.
I'm sure, Mama. I could eat some cheese now.
Oh, well, let him have it. I had better see who is causing such a commotion.
What's this about your becoming the new member from West Lynne, Archibald?
West Lynne wishes it. Now sit down, Cornelia.
Sit down yourself. I want my questions answered. Of course, you will decline.
On the contrary, I've made up my mind to accept.
Have you counted the cost?
I have given it consideration, Cornelia, yes, both as regards money and time. The expense will not be worth consideration should there be no opposing candidate, and if there is...
Aye, if there is.
Well, I'm not without a few hundreds to spare for the plaything.
That ever I should have lived to see this day, to hear money talked of as though it were dirt.
What are you making such a fuss about, Cornelia?
Have you been setting him on to this, Barbara?
I think he had made up his mind before he spoke to me, but I urged him to accept it.
Oh, you did you? Nicely moped and miserable you'll be here if he goes to London for months at a stretch. You did not think of that, perhaps.
But he would not leave me here. He would take me with him.
Is that decided?
Of course it is. Would you like to separate husband and wife, Cornelia? Yes, but you must stay to dinner now that you're here.
This has been dinner enough for me for one day. That I should have lived to see my father's son throw up his business and change himself into a lazy, stuck-up Parliament man. Good evening to you both.
Forgive me for disturbing you, Mr. Carlyle, but there are a number of men waiting to see you.
Number of men? But I'm having breakfast.
They seem mightily concerned to talk to you, sir.
But who are they, and what do they want?
As to what they want, I've no knowledge, ma'am. But there's Mr. Dill and the Justice, your father, and Squire Pinner.
Yes, quite a delegation. We'd better find out what they want.
Were I not a Justice, I'd be down there at the Buck's Head this instant with a horsewhip.
Whip him, Stu, good for him. Fellow wants hanging.
The shameless effrontery of the man to show his nose here in West Lynne.
The man's a blackguard, a shameless blackguard.
You have the nerve to put forward his name as a candidate.
Gentlemen, now what is all this? What candidate is this?
A second man has been put up for the election.
What? But the candidate for West Lynne has been returned unopposed for 50 years now.
Yeah, but there's some government intrigue behind it all, I'm sure of that. And the upshot of it is, this scoundrel has come here to fight the election.
Well, let him come on. We shall have a fair fight of it. But you have not heard who it is, Mr. Carlyle.
Stand contest with such a villain.
Well, who is this formidable opponent? Well, who is he? Mr. Archibald, the candidate who has come forward is Sir Francis Levison.
Levison?
Benjamin went through the town early this morning, exercising the horses. He came back telling me that the walls were plastered with Levison forever. Vote for Sir Francis Levison. I nearly knocked him down. It's true, says he, as I'm a living sinner. And some folks I spoke to told me that he came down last evening. There was news for a respectable man to hear before breakfast.
He arrived here by the last train and is put up at the Buck's Head. The printers must have been up all night to have the placards ready. He has an agent or something of the sort with him, and some other chap said to be a member of the government.
To boasting that the field is theirs at the onset, and that the contest will be a matter of mere form. He's mad to offer himself as a candidate here.
Yes, he's rumoured that he is heavily pressed for debt, and it is estranged from his wife. He is looking for a place in Parliament to provide him with a little respectability.
Of course, Carlyle. You go for it now, neck and crop.
Yes.
Yes.
You won't let him frighten you from a contest.
There's a meeting at the Buck's Head at 10. I will be with you there.
Mm-hmm. Did you say that Levison had put up at the Buck's Head, Dill? I've not heard that.
That he had. I expect he's ousted by this time. I asked the landlord what he thought of himself for taking in such a character, and what he supposed the justices would say to him. He vowed with tears in his eyes that the fellow should not be there another hour, and that he should never have entered the house had he known who he was.
Well, gentlemen, I'm obliged to you for your support. And now I'd like to finish my breakfast. Mm-hmm. I'll wait upon you at the Buck's Head at 10.
We'll be there, Mr. Archer.
Thank you.
All right, man. We'll see the rascal well and truly beaten.
Thank you.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, Archibald, you will not suffer this man's insolent doings to deter you from your plans. You'll not withdraw.
I think not, Barbara. He's thrust himself offensively upon me. I believe my better plan will be to take no more notice of him than I would of the dirt beneath my feet.
Archibald, have you heard the disgraceful news?
I have heard it.
Is he out of his mind?
He's out of his reckoning, I fancy.
You must carry off the contest now. I was averse to it before, but now I withdraw all my objection. You will be no brother of mine if you yield the field to him.
I do not intend to yield it.
Take no more heed of him than if he were a viper. Archibald, you must canvass now.
No. I shall be elected without canvass. You'll see, Cornelia.
There will be plenty who will canvass for you if you don't condescend to take the trouble yourself. West Lynne is in a state of excitement greater than has been its lot for many a day. I will give you £1,000 myself for ale to the electors.
No. You keep your £1,000 in your pocket, Cornelia. I've no mind to be unseated on the plea of bribery and corruption.
Don't walk so fast, William. You'll tire yourself.
You mustn't worry about me, Madam Bean. The fresh air is doing me good.
Oh, but I do worry about you, and you must take care.
There's someone coming up the avenue. It's William! William! William!
William?
Yes, William. All the best boys are called William. It's William Bain.
Lord Bain and his father, Lord Mountseven.
Lucy! William! Ah, good day, ma'am.
Good day, ma'am.
This is my new governess, Madame Dean.
Your servant, madame. Is your papa at home, Lucy?
Yes, I think he's in the library. I'm so glad you've come.
I came down as quickly as I could. I heard only last night that infamous hound was standing against your father.
I'll take you to papa.
Thank you, William.
And I shall stay to have a few words with Lucy.
Good day, Madame Dean.
Oh, you've grown a dearer girl than ever, Lucy. Have you forgotten our compact?
No.
Lucy is to be my wife, Madame Bean. It's a bargain, and we both have promised. I mean to wait for her until she's old enough. I like her better than anyone else in the world.
And I like him. It's all true.
Oh, you must not say these things to Lucy. It could never be.
Why ever not?
Your father and mother would not approve of it.
Oh, my father would. I know he would. Well, as to my mother, well, she can't expect to be master and mistress, too. Can you be off for a minute, Lucy? I want to say something to Madame Vine.
Don't be long.
What's Carlyle going to do about that frightful fellow, Madame Vine? Has he shot him yet?
What fellow?
That brute, Leveson. Didn't you know he'd come down here to contest the election?
Leveson?
Oh, Carlyle riddled his body with shot and then kicked him until he died. He'd only get his deserts and the world would applaud. I wish I'd been a man a few years ago. He'd have had a shot through his heart then. Oh. Did you know Lady Isabel?
Yes. No. Oh.
She was Lucy's mother, you know, and I loved her. I think that's why I love Lucy, for she is her image. Where did you know her? Here?
I knew her by hearsay.
Oh, only by hearsay. And to think Leveson should sneak up in this way to West Lynne. He ought to be put down like a mad dog.
And now the contest began in earnest. That is, the canvassing. Sir Francis Leveson, his agent, and the friend from town, who, as it turned out, instead of being some great gun of the government, was a private chum of the baronet's named Drake, sneaked about the town like dogs, for they were thoroughly alive to the odour in which they were held. Their only attendants being a few young gentlemen and ladies in rags, who commonly brought up the rear. The other party presented a stately crowd, county gentry, magistrates, Lord Mount Severn. Sometimes Mr. Carlyle would be with them, arm in arm with the latter. If the contesting groups came within view of each other and were likely to meet, the brave Sir Francis would disappear down an entry, behind a hedge, anywhere. He could not meet Mr. Carlyle and that condemning jury around him. One afternoon, it pleased Mrs. Carlyle to summon Lucy and the governess to accompany her into West Lynne. She was going shopping. Lady Isabel had a dread and horror of appearing there whilst that man was in the town, but she could not help herself, particularly when she was obliged to suffer the company of the indomitable Miss Carlyle.
Why do you wear glasses, Madame Dean?
My eyes are not strong.
But why wear glasses of such a horrible colour? White ones would answer every purpose.
I am accustomed to coloured ones. I should not like white ones now.
I do believe that contemptible scoundrel is coming this way.
Who do you mean?
Francis Leveson and his hirelings. Oh, and Squire Pinner's men are after him.
He's going to speak to us. Oh, my glasses, they are broken.
However did you manage that?
It must have been the wind.
Good heavens above, what an extraordinary likeness.
Good day, dear.
Are you addressing me, Francis Leveson?
As you please to take it, ma'am.
Dare lift your hat to me? Have you forgotten that I am Miss Carlyle?
It would be difficult for you to be forgotten once seen.
You contemptible worm! Do you think you can outrage me as you are outraging West Lynne?
Out of my way, woman.
Now then, that's no way to speak to a lady.
Out of my way, I say.
Here's a fellow needs taking down a peg or two. What shall we do with him, boys?
Duck him, duck him.
Yeah, there's a pound close, boy.
Let me alone.
Let's give him a taste for
it. He deserves it.
Turn him up here at West Lynne.
What have we done with Lady Isabel?
You don't want him here.
Hey, duck him
in
that
arm.
Mercy, a little mercy for the love of heaven.
Heaven? What he knows of heaven?
Hey, with him, boy. No!
They pulled him out of the pond before he was quite dead. Of all drowned rats, he looked the worst as he stood there with his white, rueful face and his dilapidated garments and his shivering limbs. Not more shivering was that wretched man than Lady Isabel. A sorry figure, that, for her once chosen cavalier. What did she think of his beauty now? I know what she thought of her past folly. The labourers, their duty done, walked coolly away. Miss Cornelia moved away also. She did not speak a word, but sailed on with her head up. though it was turned occasionally to look at Madame Veen. Cornelia was to dine that day at East Lynne. When she was in the dressing room, taking off her outdoor things, she rang for Joyce.
A fine row we have had in the town, Joyce, this afternoon.
I have heard of it, ma'am. Serve him right, they let him drown.
Yes.
Squire Penner's ploughman called in here and told us the news.
No?
I never saw a man so excited. As he saw it, if you'll excuse me mentioning her name to you, ma'am, and when she came in here, she fell into hysterics.
Oh, did she see it? I didn't see her.
Well, she was coming here with a message from Mrs. Latimer to the governess about her previous pupil.
What did she go into hysterics for?
Well, it upset her so, she said.
It wouldn't have done her harm had they ducked her, too. Joy, of whom does the governess put you in mind?
The governess? Do you mean Madame Veen?
Who else should I mean?
There are times when she puts me in mind of my late lady, both in face and manner.
Uh-huh.
But I've never said so, ma'am, for you know Lady Isabel's name is an interdicted one in this house.
Have you seen her without her glasses?
No, never.
Well, I did today. And I can tell you, Joyce, that I was confounded at the likeness. It is an extraordinary likeness. One would think it was the ghost of Lady Isabel Vane come into the world again. Lord Mountseven, was it a positively ascertained fact that Lady Isabel died?
I scarcely understand you, Miss Carlyle. Died? Well, certainly she died.
When the result of the accident was communicated to you, you made inquiry yourself into its truth, I believe.
It was my duty to do so. There was no one else to undertake it.
Did you ascertain positively, beyond all doubt, that she did die?
But of a surety I did. She died in the course of the same night. She was terribly injured. Why are you asking me all this?
A thought came over me today, only this morning, to wonder whether she really was dead.
Had any error occurred at the time, any false report of her death, I should have found it out by her drawing the annuity I settled upon her. It has never been drawn since.
Ah.
No, poor thing, she is gone beyond all doubt, and has taken her sins with her.
Ah, Madame Veen, how does William seem to you? Is there any change in his condition?
No change. At least none for the better. I understood you to say he had a nightstand, that he should have further advice.
I intended to take him over to Lynneborough, to Dr. Martin, but I've been so much engaged over this electioneering, there's been no time to think of it. Neither do I know when I shall be at liberty to do so.
Oh, let me take him, sir. I think no time should be lost. We can go by train. You can trust him with me.
I can trust him and you too. Yes, I think the plan would be a good one if you do not mind the trouble.
Oh, it is no trouble, sir. We could go today.
And so you shall, but you must take the pony carriage. It would be better to drive over there than be boxed up in the train. John will drive you to the Royal.
Yeah?
It's the hotel I use in Limbra. And Dr. Martin lives within a few doors of it. Order any refreshment you please. It'll be put down to my account.
Oh, very well, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank me? For what? For giving you a troublesome journey. Now let me see. The doctor's fee will be a guinea.
Oh, no, no. That is nothing. I will pay for him myself. I would rather do it.
Whatever are you talking about, Veen? The money.
Oh.
And you can remind Dr. Martin that the child's constitution is probably what his mother's was. It may be a guide to his treatment. He said himself that it was so when he attended him in an illness a year or two ago. Well, I trust you do not have too tiresome a journey.
She sank down in an agony of tears and despair. Oh, to love him as she did now. To yearn after his affection with his passionate, jealous longing.
But we've separated forever, and I am left to him for nothing.
Gently, Lady Isabel. This is not bearing your cross.
You may think that this election is a purely local concern. Let me tell you, my friends, the eyes of the world are focused on West Lynn.
Mrs. Carlyle.
And shall I tell
you why? This is the last place I expected to see you.
I came to see Archibald. I did not expect to be confronted with Sir Francis.
What do you make of him?
The threat of war! The threat of war!
Richard Carlyle is gone. And the way he throws back the spear. The very gesture Richard described before.
What do you think of him, Mrs. Carlyle?
I think I'm a very poor speaker. Oh, somebody's trying to attract your attention, Mr. Dill.
Oh, bless my soul. It's Ebenezer James. Excuse me, Mrs. Carlyle.
And security. The freedom of the farmer to plow his fields in peace. And to sell his goods.
Well, Ebenezer. And how goes the world with you?
Oh, jogging on. Never gets to a trot. but we interrupt the eloquence.
For you, my friend.
What do you see who's coming this way? Surely it's Upway Bethel behind that beard.
Bethel? I never thought to see him in West
And above all, our great Prime Minister.
What's all the row here, then? Oh, an election, that's all.
Francis Leveson opposing Mr. Carlyle.
Francis Leveson? From what I've heard, I wouldn't have thought he'd have dared set foot in West Lynn. Oh, who's that wasting his breath?
Who do you mean?
Oh, the man who's harangued in the crowd.
Why, that is Francis Leveson.
He is Sir Francis Leveson.
Do you know Sir Francis?
I knew him a little once.
Well, he wasn't Leveson, but something else. Hey, Bethel.
That's no concern of anyone's but my own, Ebenezer. Good day to you.
What did that signify, Ebenezer?
I have held my tongue about it, for it's no affair of mine. But I don't mind letting you into the secret. Would you believe that great baronet there used to dodge about Abbey Wood, half mad about Affy Little John? He didn't call himself Leveson then.
And what did he call himself?
He called himself Thorn, Mr. Dill. That was it. Thorn.
May well be well versed in the everyday affairs of West Lynn.
Archibald, I fear I have done a foolish thing.
I fear we all do that at times, Barbara. What is it?
It is something that has been on my mind for years.
For years?
You remember that night when Richard was at the Grove in disguise?
Which night?
The night Lady Isabel quitted East Lynn. Richard came back after his departure, saying he had met Thorn on Bean Lane. He described the peculiar motion of his hand as he threw back his hair from his brow. He spoke of his white hand and the diamond ring which glittered in the moonlight. From that night, I've had little doubt as to the identity of Thorn. I believe that he and Captain Leveson are one and the same.
But why did you not tell me so, Barbara?
Oh, how could I speak of that man to you at that time? But today, as I was passing the Raven Inn in the carriage, I saw him addressing the crowd, and I saw the very same action. The action Richard described, and which I remembered so well. I feel a conviction that Leveson and Thorn are one.
I know so. I never suspected it until this afternoon, but now I'm certain.
But what happened to make you so sure?
Dill was also outside the Raven.
I know, I saw him there.
He ran into Ebenezer James and Otway Bethel, who came home today. They were listening to the speech when Bethel recognized him, not as Leveson. He was infinitely astonished to find he was Leveson. He seemed frightened at the recognition and moved off without giving an explanation, but James told Dill that Leveson was the man Thorn, who used to be after Affy Hallijohn.
How did he know?
Because Ebenezer was after Affy himself and repeatedly saw Thorn in the wood. I believe now that it was Leveson who killed Hallijohn. But I should like to know what Otway Bethel had to do with it.
It's strange. In Mama's dreams, it is always Bethel who is the murderer, or who is at the scene of the murder. Oh, but Archibald, I have sent for Richard, telling him to be here on Saturday evening. Was that very foolish?
It puts Richard in danger, certainly. Well, we must shelter him as best we can.
Archibald, what can be done to clear him?
I cannot act against Leveson.
Not act? But why not?
My dearest, how can I? It would look like revenge.
Oh, I did not think of it in that light. Oh, but what steps can be taken?
Well, let us wait until Richard arrives. Oh. Ooh, but what did the doctor say about William?
About William?
Madame Veen took him into Limborough today.
Oh, I had quite forgotten. She tried to speak to me as I came in, but my thoughts were only on Richard. I will go and ask her.
Madame V? Mm-hmm. How long will it be before I die?
What do you mean, William? You said anything about your dying?
I heard Hannah say that I was going fast to the grave. It was when she came in with the tea things. She thought I was asleep.
Oh, you know very well that no one attends to Hannah, William. She's only a foolish girl. We shall soon have you well when the fine weather comes.
What's the use of your trying to deceive me? I'm not a baby. You might if it were Archibald. What is it that's the matter with you?
Oh, nothing, nothing. Only that you're not strong. When you grow strong again, you will be as well as ever.
If there's nothing wrong, then why did Dr. Martin send me into the other room? Before he told you what he thought. And why have you been grieving since we left there? And why do you grieve at all for me? I'm not your child. See?
Oh, William, I had a little boy of my own once, and when I look at you, I think of him, and that is why I cry.
I know. You have told us of him before. His name was William, too.
Oh, William, do you know that those whom God loves best, he often takes the first? Were you to die, you would go to heaven and leave the cares and sorrows of this world behind you. It would have been happier for many of us had we died in infancy.
Would it have been happier for you?
Yes, I have had more than my share of sorrow. Sometimes I think that I cannot support it any longer. Sometimes, William, we who are tired of the world's cares long for the grave in which we shall lie down to rest.
We don't lie in the grave, Madame V.
Oh, no, no, child. Our bodies lie there to be raised again in beauty at the last day. We go to a blessed place of rest where sorrow and pain cannot enter. I wish that you and I were both there.
This is the world is so sorrowful, Madame V. I think it is lovely, especially when the sun is shining on a hot day and the butterflies come out. You should see East Lynne on a summer's morning when you are running up and down the slopes and the trees are waving overhead and the sky is blue. And the roses and the flowers are all out.
Oh,
you would not call it a sad world.
No, my darling, a pleasant world. One we might regret to leave if we were not wearied by pain and care. But what is this world taken at its best in comparison with that other world, heaven?
Oh, I don't want to die. Why should I go and leave Papa and Lucy?
Oh, my darling.
What are you doing sitting here in the dark with the fire half out? William, you should be in bed, not lying there on the sofa.
Not yet, Mama. I don't want to go yet.
But it is quite time that you should go. There is a fire in your room, To sit up at night is not the way to make you strong. Off you go.
Yes, Mama.
No, Madame Veen, tell me, what did Dr. Martin say?
He said the lungs were undoubtedly affected, but like all doctors, he would give no decisive opinion. I could see that he had formed one. He is coming to West Lynn next week. I'm sure by the tone of his voice that he anticipates the worst.
I will take William into West Lynn myself. The doctor will, of course, tell me. Are we obliged to you for any expenses, Madame Veen?
Oh, no, Madame. Mr. Carlyle saw to everything.
Whilst we are on this topic, will you allow me to intimate that both myself and Mr. Carlyle very much disapprove of your making presents to the children? I was calculating at a rough guess the cost of the toys and the things you have bought for them, and I think it must amount to a very large portion of the salary you have received. Pray, do not continue this, Madame Veen.
I have no one else to spend my money on. I love the children.
No, you have yourself. Be so kind as to take the hint, Madame. Otherwise I shall be compelled more peremptorily to forbid you.
I will buy them less. But I must give them a little token of love now and again.
That you are welcome to do. A little token, once in a way. Not the costly toys you have been purchasing. Have you ever had any acquaintance with Sir Francis Levison?
No, I have not.
Oh, I fancied from your manner when I was speaking of the other day that you knew him, or had known him. He is a stranger to you, then?
Yes, Mrs. Carlyle.
Do you believe in fate, Madame Veen?
Yes. Yes, I do.
I don't. And yet, you are aware that it was Francis Levison who wrought the evil to this house.
I have heard of it.
And now, I have every reason to believe that it is he who brought equal disgrace and trouble upon mine. Did you know that I have a brother in exile and shame?
Well, I had heard.
But that shame lies with another, who has thrust the shame and suffering upon Richard. And that other is Sir Francis Levison. You know that my brother went after that foolish creature, Afy Hallijohn, and when her father was shot down dead, was accused of the crime.
I have heard the servants talk of it.
There was another present at Hallijohn's cottage on the night of that dreadful murder. A certain Thorn, who Afy favoured more than Richard. Richard had always been convinced that Thorn was the murderer, but no one knew anything about him or where to find him. But now he is found. Captain Thorn is none other than Sir Francis Levison.
Francis Levison, the murderer? No. No, bad as he is not that, surely.
But this afternoon, while Francis Levison was haranguing the crowd, he was recognized by two witnesses as the man Thorn. It is horrible. He murdered Hallijohn, and my poor brother has suffered all these years of odium. It is a mercy for that wretched Lady Isabel that she is no longer living. A murderer, in addition to his other achievements.
A murderer!
What's the matter? What is he to you, Madame Veen?
I beg your pardon, Mrs. Carlyle. I am given to picturing things too vividly. It is, as you say, very laudable.
It is indeed. You will understand, Madame Veen, that this information has been given to you in confidence. I look upon you as one of ourselves. Sir Francis Levison. Fancy what it would be for him to be hanged as a murderer.
A sighing, moaning wind swept round the domains of East Lynne, bending the tall poplar trees in the distance, swaying the oaks and elms, rustling the fine old chestnuts in the park. A melancholy, sweeping, fitful wind. Lady Isabel, her mind disordered, her brow fevered with its weight of care, stole out into the grounds, courting the boisterous gusts, as if they could, for a moment, cool the fire within. To the solitude of the covered walk she bent her steps, and there she descried some man advancing in the garb of a sailor. Not caring to be seen, she turned off amidst the trees, intending to come out again when he had passed, but he did not pass. He lingered in the walk. A minute, and she saw him joined by Mrs. Carlyle. They met with a loving embrace.
Embrace a strange man. Is Barbara more shamelessly false than I?
Richard! Richard! Come in out of the wind. Come and sit by a warm fire. With news that will warm your heart.
Her brother. Oh, I must be mad to think she could be false to Archibald. That fate was reserved for me alone.
She followed them to the house. She glanced in at the windows of the drawing room. Lights and a fire were in the room. There they were, together. And she stood outside, alone in the cold wind.
When can I see him, this man Leveson?
That must be contrived somehow. Were you to hang about the doors of the Raven this evening, you'll be sure to have an opportunity, for he's always passing in and out. No one will know you, or think of you either. Their heads are so turned with the election.
And if I find him to be the man, Thorne, what steps can be taken?
Well, that's the difficulty.
Who will set it going? Who will move in it?
No, you must, Richard.
Well, I must move in it. But will you not take it upon yourself?
It being Leveson, I cannot.
But why should you scruple, Mr. Carlyle? Most men, wronged as you have been, would leap at the opportunity for revenge.
For the crime perpetrated upon Hallijohn, I will pursue him to the scaffold, but to me he would appear ever as the destroyer of another. The world, always charitable, would congratulate Mr. Carlyle upon having gratified his revenge. I cannot act in it, Richard.
Well, then I must give up all hope of ever being cleared.
No, no, by no means.
But what can I do? If your hands are tied, I am sure my whole body is. Hands, legs, and neck. The latter is in jeopardy every hour.
Listen, Richard, you must put away these fears. Or else you must make up your mind to remain under the cloud for good. And remember, your mother's happiness is at stake equally with yours. I could almost say her life. Do you suppose I would advise you into danger?
Then what would you have me do, Mr. Carlyle?
Apply to ball and treadmill. Get them to take it up.
But you might as well advise me to go before the bench of magistrates at once. Ball and Treadman would walk me off there as soon as I showed myself.
Nothing of the sort, Richard. I do not tell you to go openly to that office as another client would do. What I would advise is this. Make a friend of Mr. Ball. He can be a good man and true if he chooses. Tell the whole story to him privately and ask him if he will carry it through. If he is as fully impressed with the conviction that you are innocent and the other guilty as the facts appear to warrant, he will undertake it.
But how can we get a promise from him that I can go to see him in safety?
I will so far pave the way for you. That done, my interference is over.
But, Mr. Carlyle, if Ball should take up the case against Leveson, he must apply to the bench for a warrant.
Well?
And they'd send and clap me in prison. You know the warrant is always out against me.
What necessity is there for Ball to declare that you're within region and ready to be taken? Your fears run away with your common sense, Richard.
Oh, well, if you had lived with the cord around your neck this many a year, you too would lose your common sense at times. Well, what's to be my first move, sir?
Your first move is to make sure that Thorne and Leveson are one. Everything must depend upon that. Mm.
I believe all you say, Mr. Richard, touching Thorne. It's next impossible to take in so astounding a fact that he is Francis Leveson.
You can satisfy yourself of the fact, Mr. Ball, from other lips than mine.
Otway Bethel could testify to it if he would, though I doubt his willingness. But there's Ebenezer James.
Ebenezer James? Why, he's working at present in our office. What does he know about it?
Well, he saw Thorne often enough in those days, and has, I hear, recognized him as Leveson. You had better inquire of him.
Oh, yes, indeed, sir. Leveson certainly went by the name of Thorne. When was that?
Oh, it was the autumn that Hallijohn was killed. Thorne was always prowling about his cottage of an evening.
What did he prowl for?
For the same reason that several more prowled.
I, for one, he was sweet upon Affy Hallijohn. Where was he living at the time? I never remember him at West Lynn.
He was not at West Lynn, sir. On the contrary, he seemed to take precious good care that West Lynn and he kept apart. Now that he's appeared here in his own plumage, of course, I can put two and two together. Affy used to say he came from somewhere near Swainson. And do you know what's close to Swainson?
Tell me, Ebenezer.
Leveson Park. There's no doubt he was staying at his uncle's.
Have you any doubt whatever, or shadow of doubt, that Sir Francis is the same man you knew as Thorne?
I am as certain of that man's identity as I am of yours.
And are you ready to swear to that fact in a court of justice?
Ready and willing. In any court in the world.
Enter.
Mr. Archibald, there's something I think I should tell you.
Yes, still, what is it?
A curious incident occurred to me last evening, sir. I overheard a dispute between Leveson and Otway Bethel.
Indeed.
And what I heard would go far to hang Leveson, if not Bethel. As sure as we are here, Mr. Archibald, they hold the secret of Hallijohn's murder. Now, it appears that Bethel...
Stop! I would prefer not to hear this. Leveson may have murdered him, but it is no affair of mine. Neither shall I make it such.
But if someone should take up Richard Hare's case now, he could be proved innocent.
It is being taken up, Dill. Ball has had a meeting with Richard and is now acting.
Is he going to prosecute Mr. Archibald?
I know nothing. I will know.
But I must go to their office at once and inform them of what I overheard.
That is not my affair. You must do as you think fit.
I understand, Mr. Archibald. I will go straight away. Mr. Archibald, the governess is waiting outside with Master William. Something to do with meeting Dr. Martin, she said.
Ask her to come in, will you, Dill? And get her to show the doctor in when he arrives.
Very well, sir. Won't you come in, Madam Reed? Master William.
I thought that Mrs. Carlyle was to come with us.
No, Mrs. Carlyle is expecting friends, and I do not know that she would have come had it not been so. She has not felt well the last day or two. I could not allow her to be fatigued in her present state of health.
Dr. Martin, sir.
Ah.
Well, and how fares it with our young patient? Bonjour, madame.
Bonjour, monsieur.
Come here, William. Let me feel your pulse and listen to your chest. How are you getting on with the cod liver oil? Nicer now than it used to be, eh?
No, nastier than ever. I wish I didn't have to take it.
It's good for you, my boy.
I wish I might have something to drink. Ooh. I'm very thirsty. Where can I find some water for
you? Well, if Dr. Martin has finished with you, Well, then you can ask one of the clerks to get you some milk.
Yes, let the boy go, by all means.
Thank you.
What is your opinion, Doctor?
Well, the boy is certainly delicate, but...
You know, no, Dr. Martin, I must know the truth without disguise. Tell it me freely.
The truth is not always palatable, Mr. Carlyle.
True. But for that very reason, all the more necessary. Let me hear the worst. The child has no mother, you know, to be shocked with it.
I fear that it will be the worst.
Death.
The seeds of consumption must have been inherent in him. They're showing themselves all too plainly.
How can consumption have come to him? It's not in the family, on my side, or on his mother's.
Pardon me. The child's grandmother died of consumption. The council's master.
Well, they did not call it consumption.
I don't care what they called it. It was consumption.
But is there no hope for the child?
You bade me tell you the truth. There is none. No hope whatever. The lungs are extensively diseased.
And how long?
That I cannot say. He may linger on for months, perhaps a year. Don't worry with him with any more lessons. He'll never want them. You were ill, madame. True, my love, don't you?
Are you ill, Madame Veal?
Pray do not interrupt your conversation. Pay any attention to me. I shall leave for the moment, but it is past now.
What should be the treatment?
Almost anything you please. Anything that the boy himself likes.
A warmer climate.
It might prolong the end for a very little time. Avert, it could not. And who would take him? You could not go, and he has no mother. No, I should not advise it. And now I must be off to catch the 6 o'clock train.
You will come over from time to time to East Lynn, to see William.
If you wish it. Ah, Carlyle, if we humble human doctors could only keep those whom it is the great physician's good pleasure to take, how we should be run after. Farewell, my friend. And your madame.
These are very grievous tidings. But you were more prepared for them, I fancy, than I was.
I loved the boy very much, sir. And the doctor's fear, too plainly pronounced, has given me pain.
You're very kind. Must feel an interest in my child. Do not acquaint Mrs. Carlyle with this. I prefer to tell her myself. She must not be suddenly grieved or alarmed just now.
Oh, why should she be either grieved or alarmed? She is not his mother.
No. You speak hastily, madame.
It appeared, if I understood right, that there may be a difficulty about William going to a warmer climate, no one being at hand to take him. Sir, let me do it. Confide him to my charge.
No, he's not to go. You heard what Dr. Marty said, that it would not materially prolong his life.
Well, only a few weeks, but I'm not those of value.
All be the youth. There will be weeks of isolation from his family. But no, Madame Veal, if my boy is to leave me, I must have him with me to the last.
Carlyle, what's this business I hear? I wasn't on the bench this afternoon, but I hear an application's been made to them in private about Leveson and the Hallijohn murder. It can't be true. It's too far-fetched a tale. What do you know about it?
Nothing. I have been privy to no application.
Well, it seems they want to make out how Dick never murdered Hallijohn, but that Leveson did. Leveson!
So far as Richard's innocence goes, of that I have been long convinced.
It's impossible. Dick can't be innocent. You may as well tell me the world's turned upside down.
It is sometimes, I think. If Richard was not the guilty man, would be proved yet, Justice, in the broad face of day.
If that other did it, I should think you'd take the warrant out of the hands of the police and capture him yourself.
I would not touch him with a pair of tongs.
Can Dick be innocent? Then why is he kept away? Why did he not come back and say so?
That you might deliver him up, Justice. You know you took an oath to do it.
Oh, but Carlyle, what an awful revenge this would have been for you on somebody had she lived. How her false step would have come home to her now.
False steps come home to most people.
Merrily rose West Lynn that morning. Merrily rang out the bells, clashing and chiming. It was the day of the nomination of the two candidates, and everyone took the opportunity to make it a holiday. Before 10 o'clock struck, West Lynn was crowded, all eager to mix themselves up with the day's proceedings. You see, the notorious fact of Sir Francis Leveson's having come forward to oppose Mr. Carlyle caused greater interest to attach to this election than is usual. The business of the day began.
Quiet,
Quietly, quiet, quiet! By virtue of the powers invested in me, I proclaim the nomination of the candidates for the election. The candidates are Mr. Archibald Carlyle and Sir Francis Levison. In accordance with ancient custom, I demand a show of hands for Mr. Carlyle and for Francis Levison. On a show of hands, I declare in favor of Mr. Carlyle. Sir Francis,
I demand a poll.
Such is your right. We shall adjourn these proceedings. Let the matter be settled at the hustings.
Sir Francis Levison.
Yes, Constable, I am Sir Francis Levison.
Then, sir, you are my prisoner.
Your hands off, Vernon. How dare you?
I'm sorry to do this in this public place and manner. Sir Francis Levison, I arrest you for the willful murder of George Hallijohn.
That was part 6 of East Lynne by Mrs. Henry Wood. Adapted for radio by Michael Bakewell. With Rosemary Leach as Mrs. Henry Wood, Moya Leslie as the Lady Isabel, David Collins as Mr. Carlyle, Anthony Edridge as Francis Levison, Maxine Audley as Miss Cornelia, and Julie Barry as Barbara Hare. Richard was played by Kim Wall, Justice Hare by Brian Hewlett, Bill by Tim Reynolds, Lord Mansevin by Stephen Thorne, Joyce by Joe Kendall, Little Isabel by Bernadette Windsor, and Little William by Ben Robb. Sean Arnold played the young Lord Vane, Colin Starkey, Pinner, Peter Aker, Ball, Stephen Harold, Bethel, Michael Tudor Barnes, James, and Tim Munro, Dr. Martin. The pianist was Martin Goldstein. East Lynne was directed by David Johnston.